section of National Council of Jewish Women. This is February the 22nd, 1994. Virginia Batts, Madeline Tauberg, here to do tape two of interviewing Juliette Grauer in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Judy, would you please tell us your address so we may check your voice on the machine?
I am living at the Park Plaza Apartments, which is at 128 North Craig Street, Pittsburgh, 11521.
Thank you, Judy. Juliette, would you please tell us, for history's sake, about the orphanage that your parents ran in Pittsburgh? Because in today's age, 1994, there are, I believe, no orphanages that we are aware of, or very few, in the United States.
Yes, I'll be happy to tell you about it. It was the J.M. Guskey Orphanage and Home on Perrysville Avenue on the north side of Pittsburgh. It had been started early in the 20th century by the Jewish community, actually the Reformed Jewish community, perhaps through the organization of the Rosh Hashanah Temple. Now, it was not a part of a temple, but the people who started this orphanage were affiliated with the Rosh Hashanah and with the Jewish Charities, which at that time, I believe, was called the Jewish Federation. The name has changed many times. So the supervision of the agency was through the Jewish Federation of Pittsburgh, which handled problems of the needy, the people who did not have homes, children whose parents could not care for them, sick people. They had many organizations, and this was the orphanage, were neglected or dependent, or in later years, problem children were sent. But that was all the way into the 40s.
Did you have to be Jewish to be admitted to the orphanage in those days?
As far as I know, they were only Jewish children. Now, whether that was actually a requirement, I do not know. But there were only Jewish children there.
This was funded by the Jewish Federation of Pittsburgh. Is that now called the United Jewish Federation?
You're absolutely right. It's changed its name on many occasions, but it is the same, the basic root.
But the funding began and was handled by the organization.
Correct.
And can you tell us about the orphanage? You said it began in the early 1920s.
In the early 20th century, and I can't exactly tell you the date. That I do not know. I do know that there were people in the orphanage who had been part of the effects of the Johnstown flood. Now, when was the Johnstown flood? I'm not sure myself. Was it 19? I don't know. Because one such person, may I mention names?
Certainly.
Lewis Kaplan, who became a very, very prominent attorney in the Pittsburgh, did come to the orphanage, but that was long prior to my parents, who came in 1917 to be exact. They came in October of 1917. I was born there in March of 1918. So that it had to have started long before that.
Yes,
and Josiah M. Cohn was the president of the orphanage for a long period of time prior to when my parents came.
Yes, they were president of the board of directors,
is that what you're saying? Correct.
How many members, do you have any idea, were part of that board of directors?
Oh, I don't know, but I'm sure a dozen or more, at least a dozen mm-hmm. people. Because as a child growing up, the board members would come to visit on Saturdays, sometimes participate or be members of the congregation where my father every Saturday conducted a Sabbath service. And when we had Passover, many of the board members would come, and my father did conduct a very beautiful Passover service for all of the children and for these board members who came. I can recall that Lewis Kaplan came every year, Leo Lehman, who was a very much a part of the entire, not just the Jewish community, but the entire community of Pittsburgh, a leader, they would come. And they would sit at our table with our family, and the children would surround us at their individual tables.
How many employees were there? Do you have any idea, besides your mother and father as they at the helm?
Well, as I look back, my mother and father did a great deal of work. My father was, in those days, they called him the superintendent, and he managed the affairs of the orphanage. My mother worked very, very hard. When I think of the fact that she came there when she was 19 years old and pregnant, she supervised the girls completely, although they're
5 minutes.
Yes, please. Thank you, Judy.
Although there was a girl supervisor for the girls, a boy supervisor for the boys, a janitor who took care of various things around the building, there was a woman in charge of the sewing, and they always managed to get one of the older children to participate in the supervision so that the boy supervisor would have maybe two boys who were in the orphanage, older boys, help him in managing affairs, as did they at the girls. And we had a cook there for the orphanage, but there was many occasions when my mother was behind that big iron stove cooking for 100 people. When the cook was sick or whether they were not employed at the time in a changeover from help. They had someone who assisted the girl supervisor with the sewing. When the special things had to be done, my mother taught the children how to sew, and she did some of the more delicate sewing. Every year, they had what they called Founders Day, and this was a program to honor the children and the organization itself. And they would put on a program. And my mother taught dancing with the assistance of someone else. She had a piano teacher who participated in this, and many of the children took piano lessons. The woman came from the outside once a week. But every year they put on this Founders Day program. My mother designed all of the costumes, bought all the fabrics, and she did the main work and had the children and the supervisors help in the sewing. It is amazing, as I look back today, how much she did. When I think of how little people, young people today, are doing as far as taking on responsibilities, where they're freshly married and have young children.
Your mother
had 3 children. We lived in a separate house on the grounds. She took care of us, and we always had a maid in the house to take care of little things for us while she was busy at the orphanage. We always had our meals. Our breakfast we had at our house, but when we had our lunch and dinner, because Mother and Dad had to be at the orphanage, we had a separate little dining room, but there was an opening to the large dining room, and we had our meals at that table. We were treated as children of our parents, but on the other hand, we also had to abide by all the rules and regulations for the rest of the children of the orphanage. As I look back, I think it was a very good training for me and my brother and sister. It gave us a sense of discipline. It gave us a sense of group living. It gave us a sense of knowing different people from different backgrounds. And it gave us a sense of understanding of other people's situation in life. I truly believe that it gave me a feeling of having more compassion for people in the world. Although my parents never discussed the individual children's problems, what we knew of them were what the children themselves told us.
Do you remember if any of the children's parents took them back home from there? Or did most of these children graduate from school and then leave the orphanage? I presume that's what happened. Is that correct?
The general procedure was that they stayed there till they finished school, till they got a job through my father's efforts or any board member who might have known of a job. But my father and mother primarily did this, and until they felt they could really be established and live with their parents or live with some other friend or family member.
Did any of these children go on to college, or was that an unbelievable task for them to, unless they did it on their own later?
I am thinking of, I know many did go on, women, to nursing school, because there were quite a few that I know became nurses at Montefiore Hospital and were very successful. I'm trying to think of any that went on to college, and frankly, at this point in time, I can't remember. I know that many of them did become successful businessmen. One of the first discount houses started, I think it was called, I'm not sure whether it was Claver's or not, was started by a young man who had been at the orphanage, and interestingly enough, he took with him several other young men as they grew out to be into the business with him. And they were very successfully financially, and many of them are still living and living very comfortably in Florida.
Judy, you mentioned before Lewis Kaplan. Now, he became a very prominent lawyer. You had mentioned it, and of course, I think most people in Pittsburgh knew of that name. He went on to college and then to law school. Would that have been by his own doing, or did a board member pay for this man picking up his intelligence? Or do you have any idea
about
that?
Well, truthfully, he was there before my parents came, and I really don't know the details of how he was supervised, but someone had to have helped him, because his parents were killed in the Johnstown flood, and there was no means there whatsoever. I do know that at what point, I'm not sure, that Josiah Cohn, who was a big lawyer in town and on the board, I think he was president actually of the board of the orphanage, did take an interest in Lewis, and he was his protege, and that is how Lewis originally started out in law, through Josiah Cohn's efforts and his, you know, introducing him to the proper people and getting him to the proper law office, etc.
So it holds true today. It's nice to have a guiding angel, right?
Certainly.
Or an angel in the wings. Do you have any idea how they did this? Was there a fee that anyone had to pay to be in the orphanage? Do you have any recollection of that?
This I wouldn't know, because my parents would never discuss any of that in front of us. And truly, I don't know. I have the impression that the Jewish charities just supported it, but I don't believe parents were paying. I'm certain.
No one
that
had to
I'm
pay to put their child.
That no one was ever paying to the orphanage itself.
And some of these children were indeed orphans. There would have been no
one
to pay.
There were orphans. There were dependent children. There were neglected children. And as I said, later on, I would say maybe in the 30s, they got a few children that were a bit delinquent, but not serious problems, as we would call it today.
What do you mean by neglected? Because I'm trying to put this into today's terms of what parents walking out and leaving children alone, you see that on TV.
Yes, they're not responsible individuals who didn't give them the proper care, didn't see that they got to school, didn't see that they were fed well, and the social worker from the Jewish charities may have been so notified, so she would come and visit and she would say, this is not a desirable household, these children should be placed elsewhere. I would like to take an opportunity to talk to you about something very interesting. You mentioned that orphanages do not exist today. I, of course, as you know, did go into social work, and I'm sure I did so because not that my parents influenced me, but that I saw the need for children particularly to have proper care. And that was what stimulated me to go into social work and get my master's, and I did work for a non-denominational agency, the Family and Service Bureau, and also later for the Louise Child Care Center. But when the orphanage was closed down, there was a whole new philosophy in social work, that orphanages were stigmatizing children, that children should not be in this group situation, and that they should be in private homes. Frankly, at that time, my parents did not agree with this philosophy because they felt a good institution could be controlled, whereas foster homes, one always wasn't sure what was going on there. But this was the change in the way that all social workers were looking at caring for children.
Excuse me, and this is when the point of foster homes came into being, which is what we see today.
What we see today. Now, interestingly enough, today we are seeing in the press continuously about children being placed in foster homes, and there is a beginning to think that maybe foster homes aren't the right place for children. Maybe they should be in well-run group living situations where there are more controls, more standards, and so forth. And when I look back upon it, I really do not think the children in the Gusky Orphanage felt stigmatized. I mean, they were accepted at the school. They went to the Rhoda Sholem Temple the year they were to be confirmed. My father had given them lessons at the home. He also had a Hebrew teacher there. And when they were about 14 and a half, 15, they went to temple and were part of the confirmation class. And many of them made lots of friends there. I know people today that are still friendly with people from the orphanage that they met at temple. And another thing was, I personally had a lot of close friends, relationships which I maintained as I grew up and even while I was married. I had a close relationship, particularly with two women, both of whom unfortunately have passed away.
But you grew up at the orphanage, is that what you're saying?
Yes, I grew up with at the orphanage. Mm-hmm. So that it will be interesting to see what does happen in social work and how they will place children in the future. Because there's a lot been in the press lately about how good are most of these foster homes.
Perhaps the thought of having a family relationship is what they had in mind, but unfortunately it didn't all come true.
Well,
maybe as you're putting it, that this became like a fraternity and sorority, that they had a group
together. There's a kinship
together.
There.
Yeah.
And the truth of the matter is, it is better for children to have a more closely knit family relationship. But how many are really getting it in these foster home situations? I know personally that when I was doing daycare, and we had family daycare mothers who were taking care of the children, we supervised them very carefully. But this was basically a job for those people, and they were being paid for it. And it really, I didn't feel that those children were getting the warmth. I mean, the children used to call Mr. D and Mrs. D, but they would also refer to them as Mom and Pop Doidelbaum. So they had this kinship. And my mother, to the day she passed away, which was 3 years ago at the age of 93, still heard from people from the orphanage. If they would come to Florida, they would come to visit her. Or even when my father was alive, any of them who ever came down there would always come to visit her.
So they indeed were a mother and father figure.
Yes, but they didn't presume to be their mother or father, but they were a mother or father substitute, at least a symbol of that.
Well, foster homes are really not the mother and father
either. Well, we would hope that they would assume the substitute role, but some do and some don't. I am not in any way disparaging foster homes per se, but I do know that many of them have not been very successful.
Now, see, why was the Gusky home disbanded after so many years and obviously successful and obviously a need?
Because of the new philosophy that children should be placed in foster homes.
It was that philosophy.
It was that philosophy. That was the basic reason that the orphanage closed. And as I look back upon it, as the children were getting older, they would find places, either they went with their parents or they found foster homes for them. And it was a gradual process over about a year and a half, 2 years, till they emptied out the whole place. But that was the philosophy that prompted the discontinuance of the orphanage.
Do you think that today there are that many Jewish children who would have had a need for a foster home or an orphanage? I don't hear about So many. You as a social worker may have, and this is why I'm asking.
Well, there are other facilities for children to be cared for part of the day, which did not exist previously. I mean, if a mother was working, now we have daycare centers. If a parent was ill and the father had to go to work, we have other facilities, part-time care. We have visiting nurses. We have a lot of social work facilities that were not available at that time. So therefore, there was a need for it then. On the other hand, I would not say that there aren't a great deal of neglected and delinquent Jewish children who do need supervision. And I don't say that it should be in an orphanage. But the problems that exist in the big community exist just as much in the Jewish community as far as being neglected. We are presuming that none of them are dependent because, unfortunately or fortunately, we see a certain group of people in our own socioeconomic group. But there are plenty of Jewish people that are needy.
Out of the need of this, there is an organization, I believe, correct me, within the Jewish Federation, called the Family and Children's
I don't know it exactly, but I'm sure that I have not been on that board, and I have not been really involved in it, so I don't know. But I'm sure that they have facilities or caretakers that go into homes. They'd have to. And these are the way these things are being taken care of.
Some of the slack. Mm-hmm. Now, did the children all go to the same public school and high school that you attended?
Yes.
You all went to the local schools?
Mm-hmm. We walked to school. In those days, they didn't know from busing. And it was very nice to walk to school. You made most of your friendships on the way to school, walking and chatting.
Was it a long walk?
Oh, it was a long walk to Chatham, but other people in the neighborhood were walking the same distance or more. The high school was closer. It was a long walk, and we walked in all kinds of weather. And, I mean, it was great fun to walk through school, through tunnels of snow. I mean, that was the highlight of my days. As I look back, I can remember walking to school with all children.
What was the name of the grade school?
The grade school we went to was the Chatham School. And we went straight out Perrysville Avenue and then past the high school and then down the street. Of course, we knew a lot of shortcuts over woods and where there were cherries to be picked and other things. Black-eyed Susans, we picked those seeds. We called them cornflower seeds. So we had a lot of fun on the way to school.
And your high school was Perry High School.
So
it's still in existence
today. I think it's now called Perry Traditional School, whether I drive by there frequently when I go out to Westview Cemetery. Sometimes I'll come back a different way. And the neighborhood hasn't changed much, although I think there's been a larger influx of blacks. There were black students there then, but very few of them. But again, they weren't segregated. I still say that busing has caused an artificial integration which has caused no integration at all, but is just called a lot of dissension. We walked to school with black children and enjoyed it.
It's too important not to put on tape. The question I was asking Mrs. Grauer is if she knew about the interworkings of the orphanage, about how the employees and her parents, who were essentially employees, were paid, and was there any fundraising that was directly related to raising funds for the orphanage in the community? Or did you ever hear of any talk like that?
My parents didn't discuss the financial end of it. I do know this: there was no money coming directly to the orphanage from parents. I believe my parents were paid directly by the Jewish Federation. I also know that they would have had to have a lump sum given to them each month for the running of the orphanage, because they took care of all the finances of the orphanage. The Federation did not. I can still see my mother typing the bills and sending out the checks. And she had a little desk in my father's office in the orphanage, and she worked there many a night, late into the night, getting all of this done. They paid the help directly, I know that. They ordered all the food and paid for all the food. My mother went into town and would spend days buying the clothing for the children. I remember that, and paying for it. The bills came in. So all the running of the orphanage, my parents did everything.
So they were given a budget, and they...
I presume that was their budget, and they...
So much was allotted for the year or the month or whatever.
No one else was paying the bills for the orphanage.
You don't remember any fundraising, because in today's world, every organization seems to have a fundraiser.
There was never a fundraiser for the Jewish orphanage.
It was run strictly from the Jewish Federation.
Exactly.
Most of them.
There was never a fundraiser. Different groups of people, like there were different groups, clubs that belonged to the settlement, to the Y, and clubs would entertain. They would come out and put on a little show and give the children an ice cream treat and things of that sort. I still remember the Enoch Rao Club used to come out. And some of the people that I socialize now belong to clubs that used to come out there when they were very, very young.
Now, you said the children were given, the ones I presume who wished it, dancing lessons and piano lessons. Mm-hmm. Were the teachers paid, or was that a donation?
Oh, no, they were paid.
They were paid instructors.
Yes, but as I think about the dancing lessons, my mother gave a lot of dancing lessons. My mother's mother had been a professional ballet dancer, and whenever she was around, it wasn't all the time, she would help coach them. And there was a man who came out who gave Hebrew lessons. His name is Marcus Rosenthal. Perhaps you know his son, Eliezer Rosenthal, who is married to Herman Feinberg's daughter. And he used to give the Hebrew lessons.
One thing I know, but I shouldn't be putting this on the tape, was Marcus Rosenthal's wife's family. All her sisters and brothers were raised at that orphanage.
That is absolutely true. Children were raised there, and they were really nice children, and there are many people I can tell you in the community today that were raised in the orphanage. Many of them, I wouldn't discuss it openly, but many of them do. There is one woman that I see at Rosh Hashanah Temple that was there before I was there, but she has never acknowledged it, and knowing that it would disturb her, I have never acknowledged it. My father taught us one thing, that whatever we heard at the dinner table was to go not beyond that. And I think that maybe it would be good if this happened in other households today. We were trained when we went someplace to listen but not talk. So the few things that might have slipped out of our family dinner table were verboten for us to repeat.
So it was forgotten. You heard it, and it was forgotten. Well, this is very interesting. Thank you very much. We're going to go on now.
You did, Jim.
No, I didn't. I want to talk to you about the type of work that your husband did. We, in our first tape with you, in tape one, this is tape two, side three. When we go to side four of tape two, I want to hear about your husband, because you had an illustrious husband, someone who was known all over the city and probably internationally as well, with the type of work he did as an endocrinologist. Am I correct?
Yes. Pathologist by training, but did practice it.
Endocrinology. So I'm going to close this segment of the orphanage and go on into your adult life. You lived at the orphanage through high school, is that right?
I lived at the orphanage until it closed. I was already in graduate school.
Not like today's world where the kids leave home and get at their own pad.
You
stayed with your
not.
Parents.
And I don't know anyone who didn't in
Everyone
those days.
Did. Thank you very much, Juliet.